Begin the current daf Masechet Seiv and daf Pei Beis. We begin on the second line down from the top of the Amud, where the Gemara quotes a statement that was mentioned on the previous daf and debates it. The Gemara begins. Gufa, we learned. Amri B'shub ben Levi. Kamakum sha'am Rabbi Yehuda, e masai uba meh b'mishnah seina. Whenever Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah, he says the terms e masai, when did we say this? Or he says, b'meh devam amri, he says, when did we say this? In other words, these are different ways of qualifying the statement. In Ela Farish Devacham, he's only coming to explain the words of the Chacham that come before him in the Mishnah, and he's not coming to actually argue. However, Rabbi Yechonon says a Masi Lafarish, when he says the terminology of when was this said, then he's coming to explain. Uvameh Lachlik, when he says, however, when was in what context was this said, then he's coming to argue. Now the Gemara asks on both Rabbi Yechonon and Rabbi Shub ben Levi, because they both agree when the Amasai, when that term is used, that it's a qualification and not an argument. However, the Gemara asks, the Amasai Lafarishu, is it really true that when it's the term of Amasai, when was this said, is coming to explain? But what's now, we learn the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that says, Ve'elu hein apsum, these are those that are invalid for their testimony to say Eidus and Bezin. And the reason being is because they're all considered gazlonim, thieves on some level, at least on the rabbinic level, but based on the principle which we're going to discuss called asmachta leikanya. Asmachta leikanya basically means that there's a reliance that you have that you don't really think you're going to end up having to shell out the money and to give it. And therefore, on some level, you're not really acquiescing, and therefore there's no real kinyan, and therefore the money that's being shelled out is considered on some level a gzela. And therefore, these are included in the categories of those that are pasul le'edus because they're gazlanim, who are a gazlan, a thief, is invalid for testimony. Hamasachi b'kuvir, those that play with dice, in other words, a term for gamblers. Umava b'rib is those who loan money on interest. Umafrichi yayinim and those that have the doves flying, which basically means like the races they would have to see whose dove is going to get where first. So all these are included in this type of a category, which the guy who's taking on interest and the one who's gambling, they don't really think they're going to have to shell out the money. And therefore, although they know there's such a possibility, that's called asmachta leikanya. Really, the parties involved are not really interested in giving up their money. Therefore, the one who's taking it is considered a thief. V'secher shvi'is. And the same halacha applies to those that do business with shmita produce, because the Torah tells us la'ochla, that you're allowed to eat the shmita produce, but it's coming to exclude v'lo l'schar, you can't have business dealings with the Shemitah produce. And therefore, as Rashi tells us, this person that lusts after money so much to be over an Aveira on money, because he's being over the Aveira of La'achla B'loy L'Schaira on the Shemitah produce, therefore he's called a Rasha. And the Torah tells us in Sefer Shemais in Perichav Gimel, Al Tashis Rasha Aid, you can't have a Rasha being an Aid. This person is included in the category of a Rasha because he's willing to be over on the Issa just to get money. He's invalid. So these are the types of categories that are Usr and Pasul, besides those which are obvious in the Torah, these are included and they'll be Pasul Eidus. On that, Rabbi Yehuda said in that Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Amasai, when did we say this, that these categories are going to be Usr, for example, the gamblers, that they're going to be Usr and Pasul Eidus? Bizman Shein Le'umnus Elihi. That's only when he has no other profession but this of gambling. And then Rabbi Yehuda holds that Asmachta, again, this idea about relying that you don't really think you're going to have to shell out the money, which he relies, he thinks he's going to win, he's going to get blackjack or whatever it is first. So regarding that asmachta, on that condition, that is considered a good kinyan. And that's not, the person involved would not be considered a gazlan, a thief. But however, Behuda says, he qualifies, why are these people invalid for Eidus? It's because they're not involved in what's called yeshuva shalom. They're not involved in things in the affairs of the world. And since they don't recognize and they're not proficient in the toil, and the challenges that people have to make money, so they're not careful about their friends and the fact to have their friends lose money because they don't understand what it means to have a real job, 9-to-5. This guy goes, he gambles and this and that, and this is his whole profession. He's very callous with regards to money. So that's the type of person we said, the gamblers, he's going to be pasul eidus. Again, not based on the concept of a smachta le'kanya. Smachta is kanya. However, you're pasul eidus because you're frivolous. You don't understand, you don't appreciate what it means for people's money, and therefore you're not going to be so careful about your testimony. But if you have a different profession besides gambling, you just go on the weekends, then such a person will be valid for the eidus because although he gambles, there's no intrinsic psul on that. Because as we said, Asmachta is Kanya, according to Behuda. It's only because if this is the only thing he does, so we won't appreciate what he has to say about other people's money. And then the Gemara continues, we're not regarding this mission in the Braisa that elaborate on this, and said, however, the Chacham say, whether this person has no other profession but this of gambling, or whether he has another profession besides this one, either way he's going to be invalid for saying testimony. Now the Gemara thinks that who is this Chacham that argued Rabbi Yehuda? It's the Tanakhama of the Mishnah. So obviously, and this is what the question of the Gemara is, that when he says a Masai, that he's obviously coming to argue on the Pinya of the Tanakhama, as in the Brisa they elaborate that the Chachamim, who it seems like they're the Tanakhama, argue on him. So how could we have said in both opinions of Yochanan and Shimon Levi that a Masai is coming to explain? But we see the Brisa seems to indicate that he's coming to argue and not coming to explain. So the Gemara answers, that Brisa is that say, seems to indicate that he's arguing is not really arguing on the Tanakhama of the Mishnah. That's Rabbi Yehuda Amir Tarfani. And that is, he says, unlike Rabbi Yehuda, he says Asmachta is loikanya. But in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is not coming to argue in the Tanakhama, rather he's coming to explain the opinion of the Tanakhama. And therefore, it's not a contradiction. This Brisa is referring to somebody else. That's Chacham Aimrim. That's Rabbi Yehuda Amrim Tarfin, that he argues on the principle that Rabbi Yehuda, who is explaining the Tanakhama, that they both say Asmachta is Kanya. The other Brisa of Chacham Aimrim is saying the opinion that Asmachta loy Kanya. The Tanakh learned the Brisa. Amrim Rabbi Yehuda Mishrim Rabbi Tarfin, where here he comes to explain the concept of Asmachta loy Kanya, that if you're relying on something, you're not definite about something, you're not all in. And the Gemara is going to draw an interesting corollary from a halacha of when there's two people that are sitting and they see somebody walk by. Now one of them says, I'm Nazir because this person is a Nazir. And the other one says, I'm a Nazir because this person is not a Nazir. So you would think to say that at least one of them is going to be a Nazir. Let's find out if he's a Nazir or not. And if he is, so the one that says he is because he is will become a Nazir. And if he's not, the one that says I'm a Nazir because he's not will become a Nazir. But Reb Tarfin says no. Lo ilam ein echin hem nazir. Not one of them becomes a nazir. What's the reason? Lefisha ein naziris el hafla. Naziris requires what's called hafla, which means that your nether, your oath, has to be explicit on something that's definite, but not when it's a suffix out of doubt, if he's a nazir or he's not. And here, both of them didn't really know. They're just taking a chance. Amok, even the Mesafkele Nazir Eloi Nazir, who is obviously from the fact, which is this halacha that we're drawing from Reb Tarfin. Since each one didn't really know if he's a Nazir or not, Loi Meshab Ben Navshe, so therefore they're not putting themselves into the situation of becoming a Nazir, and that's why he said they're both not going to be a Nazir, because it has to be a Vadai, that's what the Hafla, the explicit verbalization of what you want, has to be on something that's definite. The same thing applies to this halacha of the Mesachke Mekuvya, those who are gamblers, that they're going to be Pasul Eidus, even if it's not their main profession, just by virtue of gambling, Kivin the Loyal Ikani, since they don't know if they're going to win or not. Eloi Kani. So Legamar Umakna. So therefore, the people involved, they don't totally give in to the idea that they're going to have to shell out that money. Similar over here, where we say they're not going to become a Nazir, because you're not really interested in becoming a Nazir, because you don't really know. You're taking a chance. You're hoping that you're going to be wrong and that he'll be right. So therefore, you never really put yourself all in and become a Nazir. Same thing applies over here when you're involved in gambling. So therefore, you don't really think you're going to have to shell. Who wants to shell out all that money? You think you're going to win. And therefore, that's Asmachta Loi Kanya. And therefore, even if you have a profession, you're going to be Pasul Eidus based on the fact that you're a goslin, you're a thief, you're stealing the other person's money because he doesn't really want to give it, and that's why your pasul eid is based on the concept, at least of the Rabbanan, that you're considered a goslin. Harnola chaloyin, we shall return to you, perek chaloyin, the seventh perek of Masechtas Erevin. Now we continue on to the eighth perek of Masechtas Erevin, perek ketz and mishtatvim. Now this, the beginning of the perek discusses regarding the halacha of tchum, that is at the end of 2,000 amos, which a person is allowed to go at the end of his tchum, then you can put an eir over there, which we're going to learn on another Mishnah, which how much food you have to put there, but it's considered as if that's your residence because you put your Shabbos meal over there. Then that becomes your residence. You can go another 2,000 amos in that direction. However, our Mishnah introduces a fact about ketzad mishtatvim b'tchumen. How can you join together with a tchum? And that is, if somebody wants to do it for himself, fine, he can do that. But how do you go ahead and create a joint tchum? And let's say many people have to go to a kiddush or a simcha somewhere out of the tchum, and therefore someone wants to do it for everybody to make it convenient, or sometimes in the city, if people are not aware that an area of it is out of the tchum, let's say somebody wants to go ahead and be mezaka for everybody, an erev tchum that they can walk from one side of the town to the other. So how does one go about doing that? So the Mishnah tells us, one person can put a barrel of food over there, and he says, this is for all the people of my city. And that is l'chol misha yelich lebeisa avol oy lebeisa mishnah. Whoever wants to go, and it's Shabbos, he wants to go to b'menachem avol somebody, or to go to a beisa mishnah, to a simcha, a kiddush, or whatever it is on Shabbos. So therefore, he knows many people are going to want to go, and it's out of the tchum. So he's mezakeh to them, whoever from my city wants to go. However, the mishnah does tell us v'chol shekibul alav m'ba'od yoyim. So therefore, anybody that's mekabel on himself, that tchum that person made for the whole city, that he wants to rely on that erev and to go with that, then mutter, he's allowed to go ahead and utilize that person's erev that he had made for the whole city. However, misha techshech aser. However, if he only said, he only relied on it, he wanted it to be included in the erev when it was already after Shabbos started, then he's forbidden to use that erev. Shema arv misha techshech, because one cannot do an erev from when it's dark already, and this person only joined in after it was dark, he can't utilize the erev anymore. It has to have been already done from before Shabbos. So now the Gemara tells us a huge concept, fundamental principle in the halachas of erev v'tchumen. I'm Rabbi Yosef. Ein ma'arvin. We're not allowed to go ahead and create an erev, and that is, Chacham did not permit us to go out of the tchum through an erev. Ela d'var mitzvah, only for a mitzvah purpose. You can't just go ahead and say you want to go ahead somewhere further. It has to be for some type of a mitzvah purpose. So the Gemara says, "My kamash malan." What's the chiddush? This was what we learned in our Mishnah. It said that for the whole city, and then we said l'chol mishayelich lebeis avol or lebeis mishnah, that whoever wants to go to a beis avol for a mourner to go be menachemim on Shabbos, or to go to a simcha, which are obviously two dvar mitzvahs. So you see, the Mishnah picked those cases to tell us that's the halacha only by dvar mitzvah. And that the Gemara says, no. I would have thought to say that's just a common stance of what would happen. In other words, people generally would want to go somewhere to base Avol or to base a Mishnah. But in truth, really, you would think it's even L'dvar HaShos. That's what we have to tell you from Rabbi Yosef, that it's Davka L'dvar Mitzvah, that's the only time we're allowed to go ahead and create an Erev Tchumen. Our Mishnah said that regarding this, that the person that wants to go ahead and merit the Erev Tchumen for all the people of the city, so he said that v'chol shekibul alav m'ba'od yoyim, whoever accepted upon himself the Erev from when it's before Shabbos, then he's permitted to utilize that Erev. So the Gemara infers, shamin mina ein brera. So we can hear from this that we don't say the concept of brera, which the concept of brera means to say that retroactively we say that what you had wanted is really as if it was done back then. As the Gemara says, the Iyesh Breira, because if you say that there's the concept of Breira, and again, this concept comes up many times in different areas of halacha. For example, let's say when someone has a barrel full of produce and he wants to take, he says the truma that will be taken off is in this barrel. Then when you're drinking, it retroactively we say that the leftover is the one of truma because you're not allowed to eat truma. So there's that type of a concept that we say retroactively this is showing that this is what it was. So here also that the Gemara is proving that obviously you don't say Breira. Because the Iyesh Breira, because if you would say that retroactively, we say that this is what it was, Tigli Milsa L'Mafreya, it should be revealed retroactively, that it was already from before Shabbos that he had preferred to be in it. That is, he heard about it before Shabbos. Now he only, after Shabbos, says, you know what, let me be included in the Erev. So that comes out retroactively when the Erev was done, that he was part of that. It's just, and that's what Breira says, that because the person had merited to everybody, but now he wants to be part of it retroactively. If you say the concept of Breira, it should say that he was included in it even from before Shabbos, because that's what it means. It says that now that I'm deciding that this should be the Trumah, or that I should be part of it, that when it was made for me from before Shabbos, I was included in that. So and here we say that not. Here we say that if he only agrees to it, Mishra Techshach, that it's, he's going to be Aser. Obviously, you don't say Breira. Another Gemara is Doicha the Raya. I'm Ravashi. Hoydi'uhu v'loy hoydi'u getani. The terminology that should be understood in our Mishnah is that he was notified or he was not notified from before Shabbos is what we're saying. And that is, if he was notified from before Shabbos, then truth be told that we would say Yesh Breira. And that is, even if he didn't agree to be part of it before Shabbos, and he only said, you know, once it was already Friday night, I was like, you know, I really would like to go to that Simcha, that Kiddush tomorrow, then we would say that it is clarified retroactively that at the time when the Erev was acquired, that he was part of that. However, when the Mishnah says that Mishatechshech is Aser, it means to say that he wasn't notified that someone had made the Erev until Friday night. He's by davening, and someone says, you know what, you know Yankel, he went ahead and he made an Erev Tchum, and he's like, yeah, I would love to be part of that. And that is what the Gemara is saying, that the Mishnah said that it's Aser, because they wouldn't apply the concept of Breir over there, because he didn't know that there was an Erev to say that retroactively we know that his Das was to be part of that Erev, because he didn't even know about it until after Shabbos already started. So there, it wouldn't even apply the concept. That's why I say Mishatech Shachasa. But the truth be told, that we would say, if he knew about it from before Shabbos, even though he only agreed to it till when Shabbos already started, that he would be included in the Erev, because possibly we would say Yesh Breir. Now, regarding the topic of the Mishnah that we were discussing, regarding being Yoytze with someone else's Erev, the Gemara says the following halacha. Amar Avasi, Katan ben Sheish, a child that's 6 years old, Yoytze be'erev imay, can be Yoytze with the Erev that his mother had made, and that if, let's say, his mother had made her own Erev, because she wanted to go to the Beis HaMishnah, and she wasn't Mizaka the Erev to her son could go with her to the place that she had made the Erev. And the reason being is because he's considered as part of her, as almost part of her own body. And the reason being because we say mistama, we say the probability is that she had in mind her son to be included herself because he can't go anywhere without his mother around. And therefore, up to age 6, we say that the Erev she made for herself is inclusive of her son that's 6 years old. But the Gemara asks on this. Meisvei, we learn in the Braisa, Katan Shetarach L'Imai, regarding a child that needs his mother, Yoytze be'erev imay, he can be included in the erev of his mother. V'she'ein tzarech l'imay, if he doesn't need his mother, then ein yoytze be'erev imay, then he cannot be included in the erev of his mother. Now, what the Gemara is trying to tell us is that, now, if you're going to say that, as we had just said before in this halacha of Rav Ashi, that it's age 6 that's still considered tzarech l'imay, and that's what you would explain in this braisa, that therefore wouldn't contradict Rav Ashi, this is what the Gemara says now, that you can't say that. And I'll prove to you that obviously this age of Tzarech L'Imoy that's included in the Erev of the mother is less than the age of 6 that Rav Ashi had said, because it's not Nami, because we learned similarly a Mishnah, Gabi Sukkah, related to the halachas of Sukkah Ki HaGavna, with the same type of a case. And we explained over there that what is considered a cotton that's Tzarech L'Imoy that needs his mother. So we learned, it says over there in that Mishnah, Katan she'ein tzarech l'imay chayv b'sukkah. A child that doesn't need his mother is liable in the chiyuv of being in the sukkah, and that's because the halacha of chinuch midrabana that we require him to be mekayim the mitzvah of eating in the sukkah. Vavinaba, and we asked, ve'ezehu katan she'ein tzarech l'imay. What is the age of a child? What is the category of a child that doesn't need his mother that we would say he's mechuyiv in eating in the sukkah? And that the Gemara says, tu pshatim. Amri de be'er b'yanai. Either it's a child that when he goes to the bathroom, he doesn't need his mother to wipe him. Rabbi Shimon Lakish says, whatever the child is that he gets up and he doesn't call mommy, then that's considered a child that's already and then he's mechuyev in the midst of eating the sukkah. Which basically means to say that since at that time he doesn't need her, so we would call him ein tzarech l'imay. And that the Gemara asks on that pshat of Rishim Malakish, wait, Eima Salka Daidach, do you really think that it means that when the child gets up, and if he doesn't say Mami, only then would he be considered a Gadol, in other words, a child that's Ein Tzarech L'Imay? But Gedolim Nami Kar, even big kids, even big children, they also say Mami. In other words, how can you say that what's considered Ein Tzarech L'Imay is until he gets up, and he's not going to say Mami, but if he says mommy, he's considered Tzarech L'Imay, but what the problem of the Gemara is that even bigger kids say mommy because they need the help of the mother in the morning. So how could we say that would be considered the criteria if it's Tzarech L'Imay or not? Rather, the Gemara says, Kol Shenir Mishnasei Ve'inakari Ima Ima. What we meant to say in this category of Reb Shimon Malakish, his categorization, and what's considered Ein Tzarech L'Imay is if he gets up and he doesn't say mommy, mommy. In other words, that he doesn't scream until she comes, that is mommy, 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 mommy. Yes, even a big kid would say mommy, but if she doesn't come, he'll get up and do what he has to do. However, if he doesn't say mommy, 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 then he's considered in the Tzarech L'Imay. Fine, so that was the two categorizations. Now the Gemara asks, Bekama, how old is that that's considered in the Tzarech L'Imay that when he gets up in the morning, he's not going to say mommy, mommy until she comes, which would then be considered in the Tzarech L'Imay. And that we said, Keba'arba Keba'chamish, which is around 4 or 5 years old. That is, if a person's 4 or 5, depending on how mature the child is, then already that's considered Ein Tzarech L'Imay. So the question of the Gemara is, so we see that when you're already 5 and possibly even 4, that then you're considered Ein Tzarech L'Imay. And that's why you're mechuyev to sit in the sukkah. So that would be mashma, that the same halacha which we're saying in the Braisa, which is the same definition of Ein Tzarech L'Imay, needs to be included lehedye with her mother to merit the son, and it's only if he's tzarech l'imay that then she doesn't have to be mezaket to him, and he's included by default in her erev. Now, how old would that be? That would only be less than 5 or possibly even 4, because once he's 4 or 5, then we said that he's already considered in the tzarech li'imoy. And yet Rav Ashi said that up until age 6 he's included. That seems to be contradicted by the Braisa as we elucidate that from the Mishnah, that in the tzarech li'imoy is already at age 4 and 5, and therefore you would have to be mezaken to the Erev, and they wouldn't be included by default. Now we continue on to Amud Beis, where the Gemara says an explanation. I'm Rav Shua Berei Rav Idi. That the truth is, as you said, that a child that's already 5 is not yoytze with the mother's Erev until she specifically includes him in the Erev. Now Rav Ashi was also talking about that the mother had specifically included the child in the Erev. However, Kikom Rav Ashi, the chiddush that Rav Ashi was telling us, was that if his father had made an Erev for him in one direction, and still, in spite of that, we will include him in the direction that his mother had made for him. As the Gemara says, Kigun She'ir Balov Aviv Litzafin Ve'im Ladam. That is, his father said, I'm making an Erev for you for the north. And his mother had included him in the Erev to the south. That a child, that even if he's already 6, would rather be next to in the company of his mother. And therefore, you're right. In truth, to be included, you have to be included already from age 5. However, this that we said, that it's a child up until 6 that's included the mother's Erev, it meant even though she's specifically making him, but the chiddush is, even though the father had made him in a different direction, when the child gets old, he'd rather be with his father. However, when it's up to age 6, he'd rather be with his mother, and that's what we said, he's included in the Erev of his mother. And that the Gemara asks, we'll say a braisa that seems to contradict many of the statements that we just said. Regarding a child that needs his mother, yoytze be'erev imay ad ben sheish. He is yoytze with the erev of his mother until he's 6 years old. So the Gemara goes through checking off who seems to be contradicted by this braisa. Well, first of all, tiyufta ribshu bar Rav Idi tiyufta. First of all, what seems to contradict this last teretz the Gemara gave from ribshu bar Rav Idi to answer Rav Ashi seems to be contradicted from this. Because you cannot say that here we're talking about the same type of teretz that he had said, that when, what does it mean up till age 6 he's included in the erev of his mother? When the father and mother had made an erev, one to this way and one to that way. Because the terminology used in that braisa is ad, which is mashma, whether he's 1 or 2 or 3, up until age 6, he's including the erev of his mother. Now, what obviously that comparison of 1 and 2 and 6 is that just like when he's 1 or 2, that's even if the mother doesn't merit it to him. And 4 and 5 is obviously also talking about when she didn't include him specifically in the erev. And therefore, Rashi says, even if you're going to say, as the Gemara assumes in a moment, that it's ad v'loy ad b'chlal, that when we say up till age 6, it's not really including 6, only 5, it still would refute the opinion of Rabbi Shua that he had already explained that a child that's even 5 years old, you have to be mezaketim, as we had learned from the halacha of Sukkah, that already 4 or 5 is already considered ein tzarech li'imoy. So therefore, here where we say that he is included in the erev of his mother, even if she doesn't specifically include him, as we're saying, by 1, 2, 3, ad, up until 6, and that's comparing all the ages at the same, and we know that when you're younger, for sure you don't have to specifically include him. So then it refutes Rabbi Yeshua, who said that, no, really, you do have to include him at 5. However, this that we said up until 6, I meant to say in a certain case of when the father had made him included and the mother had made him included, which is not the case of the Braisa. And then the Braisa includes him up until 6 is definitely refuting his pshat that he had said in Rav Ashi. But then the Gemara continues, let's say this refutes the explanation of Rav Ashi, because the assumption the Gemara is making now is that when it says in the Braisa up until age 6, it means ad v'loy ad b'chlal. That is, generally we think that it does not include the up until. We would say up until 6, it means not including 6, but rather till 5. Yet Rav Ashi had said that even the child that's 6 years old is included in the erev of his mother. To which Amalcha Rav Ashi, no, ad v'ad b'chla. Rav Ashi tells him, no, when the Braisa says up until 6, it means including 6. And therefore that's, the Braisa is exactly like him. That up until age 6, we assume that the mother's erev is by default going on the child too. Then the Gemara continues, let's say this refutes the opinions of Rabbi Yana Rish Lakish that we had brought on the bottom of Amud Aleph, that they explained regarding the halachas of Sukkah, that what is the age of considered Einat Tzarech Le'imai, that doesn't need his mother anymore, that would be Mechuyiv in Sukkah, that they said around age 4 or 5, depending on the maturity of the child. Yet here we learn regarding the Erev of the mother, that as we had said, that's the same thing of Katan She'einat Tzarech Le'imai, that when they're not yoytz in the erev of the mother, which, what's that? Obviously, that's only older than age 6. Because they were considering that because as we said, the halacha of yitzah be'er v'imo is only when he's tzarach l'imo. And yet we see that's considered tzarach l'imo even up till age 6. And they had said already from 4 or 5 is considered ain't a tzarach l'imo. So let's say that the halacha of Eiv contradicts the halacha that they say by Sukkah, as we tried comparing the two halachas on Amud Aleph. Another thing says loikash. It's not a difficulty to their opinion, because this halacha of Sukkah that we had said that they are considered ainat tzarach li'imli already by age 4 or 5, the isi avui b'masal. That's when the father is in the city, and therefore the child goes in and out of the city with the father. Therefore, he's not considered tzarach li'imli from when he's 4 and above, as they had said that already by age 4 or 5 you're already considered ainat tzarach li'imli. However, the braisa that says that it's up until age 6 that we just quoted regarding the halachas of Erevin, of Erev Tchumen, is Dula Isa Avu B'masa, is where the father is not in the city. And therefore, then we said if there's no father, then even up till age 6, he's considered that he's always in the company, he can't go anywhere without his mother. And that's why we said that then it would be even up till age 6 that he's included in the Erev. But if there is a father, then they would say even by the halachas of Erevin, as they say by the halachas of Sukkah, they would be even from age 4 or 5 would already be considered in a tzarach li'imoy, and then they would have to, the mother would have to specifically include the child in her Erev. Now Rashi tells us that the teretz that the Gemara says regarding Rabbi Yannai Rish Lakish seems like Rabbi Yeshua could have said the same teretz also. To which Rashi says, no, the Gemara couldn't have said that, because when the Gemara had asked the question on Ravasi, that regarding what seems to contradict him regarding the halacha that he says regarding Erevin that's even up till age 6, yet by Sukkah we find that it's only till age 4 or 5, that already 4 or 5 is in tzarach li'imoy. If Rabbi Yeshua had held that this svar that the Gemara is saying right now, he could have answered that is the pshat in Ravasi, that Ravasi is talking about when the father is not in the city, and therefore he could have said a bigger chiddush that even when the mother did not include the child in the Erev, that he's permitted up until age 6. And therefore, from the fact that he doesn't say that, obviously that he doesn't hold there's a difference between if the father is in the city or not. And therefore, the Gemara did not say that teretz that they say for Rabbi Yannai Rish Lakish over here regarding the difference if the father is in the city or not for Rabbi Yeshua, and therefore that Rabbi Yeshua's opinion was refuted. But Rabbi Yannai Rish Lakish is not refuted that they have this difference, and even though Sukkah and Erevin is the same, which Rabbi Yeshua seems to be going in that premise, but they could hold to that difference regarding if the father is in the city, then they would be considered in the tzarach li'imah already from 4 or 5. But if the father is not in the city, then would be even up to age 6 that they would be considered of tzarach li'imah. Now the Gemara continues on this theme about including other people in the Erev, as we had been speaking about, and the topic was of our Mishnah. So Tanban learn the Brisa. Ma'arav Adam al Yedei. A person could include in the Erev for them Benoi ubita ketanim, that he can include in his Erev for his sons and daughters that are minors, or al yedei avdi v'shevcha sakananim, or for his male or female servants that are non-Jewish, bein l'daitan, bein shaloi l'daitan, whether with their knowledge or without their knowledge, he can have them included in his Erev, even without their acquiescing to that. But he cannot include in the Erev loyal de avdi v'shevcha se'ivrim, not for his male or female Jewish servants, v'loyal de benoi ubita gedolim, not for his sons and daughters that are adults, ishta, and neither for his wife, only with their willing, only with their knowledge. That is, if they agree to have him make the heir for them, then they could. But without them, without their knowledge, he cannot make an heir for them. Similarly, the Gemara brings another brayso. Tani idach. Learn another brayso that elaborates on this a little bit more. Lo ya'arav adam al yedei benoyu bita gedolim. A person cannot make an heir for his adult sons and daughters, or for his male and female Jewish servants, or neither for his wife, only with their knowledge, with their willingness to be part of that Erev. But he could include in his Erev for his male and female non-Jewish servants, or for his minor sons and daughters, whether with their knowledge or not. And the reason is, and this is what this Brisa adds, because their hands are his hands. In other words, everything that they have or own or do is already included under the domain of the father, of the master, and therefore he can go ahead and decide for them where their residence is. However, the Brisa concludes, "Bekulon she'irvu," regarding all these people, that if they made their own Erev, ve'irv aleim rabban, and their master made an Erev for them in a different direction, yoytzim b'shal rabban, they're included in the Erev of their master, chutz m'neisha, except for the woman, for the wife, neisha yichel limchiz, because she could protest, says, no, I don't want to be, I want to go the other direction. I know you want to go to that kiddush on Shabbos, but I want to go to the other simcha in the other direction of the city. Which the Gemara asks, what do you mean, Isha Ma'ishna? Why is the wife different than, let's say, the Eved Ivri or the adult sons and daughters, which we had seemed to say that they're all the same regarding that you need to have their das, their willingness, and yet here it seems like only the wife can protest, but everybody else has to be included in the erev of their father, their master. So Rabbi answered, no, the truth is, Isha v'chol de damila. When we said except for the woman, it meant those that are similar to her, in other words, that you need to have their das. Yes, it's not just the wife, it's even the Eved and the Eved Ivri and the Ben and Bas Hagudon. Now the Gemara says, we had said before, Amamar, one of the statements we just said before was Chutz min the Isha m'mneishe choyle limchis. We said that except for the woman, which we just said that means all those types that are like the woman, that you need to have their das, because she could protest. And since she could protest, then we say that although the husband is trying to make her include in the erev that he's making, she's not included because she could protest. So the Gemara makes an inference. Time of the machi, the reason why it seems like she's not going to be included in the erev of her husband is because she could protest. Hastama, but in general, if let's say she's quiet and she didn't make an erev in another direction, so then it would sound like nafka b'dabayla, that she could be included in the erev of her husband, right? It's only because she'll protest. But if not, sounds like that what he made for her will be included. On that, the question is, hakatani reisha, but we learned in the beginning of the b'raisa, that seems to contradict the statement of the end of the b'raisa. We said, ilamidaitam. Said all these people, the woman, the Abed Ivri, and the adults, sons and daughters, they could only be included in the erev that he's making only with their das, with their willingness. My love to Amri in, doesn't that sound like where they say, yes, we want to be included, but not where they're quiet, even if they don't protest, they have to actively be involved in saying they want to be part of it. Now the Gemara says, lie, no. My elamidaitim, what does it mean only with their willingness they could be part of an erev that the father, husband, master is making? It means to ishtiku, it means where they're quiet. Lafuke hechad Amri lai, where it's coming to exclude, where they say, no, we don't want to be part of it, where they protest. But if they don't protest, then they are included in the erev of their father, husband, and master. The Gemara asks, but ha bakulan she erev, but we learned in the Brice that said, all these that made their own erev, the erev alein rabban, and their master made a different erev in a different direction for them, we said, yeitzim bishal rabban, that they're including the erev of their master. Now, bistamahu, that sounds like, in general, without the other parties contradicting what he said or did or protesting. Yet, and still v'ktani, and still we learned chutz min the isha, delay nafki, except for the woman and all those which are included like her, which is the Eved Ivri and the Benay Bita HaGadolim, that it sounds like that the woman would be excluded from the Erev that her husband made, even when she doesn't protest, which is, he just made it, which that's what the case sounds like when we're saying that if they made their own Erev and the master made his own Erev for them, that they're included in his Erev. Sounds like even if they're not protesting. But by the woman, which it says chutz min isha and b'chol de damila, we're saying that she won't be included, which sounds like even if she's not protesting, that's not like what we had just answered. Rava says, no. Kivin she'irvu, since they made their own air, because that's the case that we're talking about, that there is no greater protest than that. As they say, actions speak louder than words. If I'm making my own air, I don't have to actively say, wait a second, I'm not including your air. You're right. If we were quiet, then we would be including the air. Even the wife and the Ben Abbas HaGadolim and the Eved Ivri. Although it says in the other case, which sounds like without saying anything, without protesting, that they would be excluded, that's because their actions are speaking louder and saying, we don't want to be part of your Erev. Look, I made my own Erev. I don't have to actually tell you. And therefore, in lecha michui gedol mizeh. Now the Gemara continues again on this theme of Eruv Tchumen. And now this Mishnah elaborates on the previous Mishnah to say, kamahu shiur. How much is the measurement of the Eruv Tchumen? We know that Eruv Tchumen is based on the principle of that this is your halachic residence for this Shabbos, although you really live over here, but now you're putting your meals over there. So now, when we said in the previous Mishnah that you could even join many people together, and you could take a barrel and say this is for the whole people, for the people of the whole city, how much food has to actually be placed over there to be considered a valid Eruv Tchumen? And that the Mishnah says, Mazen shtei sudis l'chol echad ve'echad. It has to be two meals worth for every single person. So although we said you could have joined the whole city, but you'll have to have so much food that every single person is going to have two meals worth, because that's the only way it's going to be halachic residence. Unlike the halachas of Rivach HaTzeris and Shetufim Avais, which is much less, here we have to have actually that your two meals worth, which is what you need for the Sudas of Shabbos, that is going to be Kiveya, your halachic residence for Shabbos. So we have machlokes regarding what type of two meals is the criteria for being considered the Erev Tchumen on Shabbos. And that's the Mishnah says. Mizayne l'chayil v'loy l'shabbos. We mean a weekday two meals, but not a Shabbos two meals. That's the opinion of Remeya. Rehuda says, l'shabbos v'loy l'chayil. No, we measure it with two Shabbos meals and not with two weekday meals. And the Mishnah says, v'zeh v'zeh meskavim l'hakol. Both Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, their intention was to be lenient. As we know, regarding the halachas of Erevin, we always say we go to the lenient interpretation. Both of them wanted to say a lenient interpretation. It's just that they have a machlekes regarding which one would be considered a lesser meal. And that is Reb Meir that says that if we assess it with a weekday meal, he holds on Shabbos, people eat more because the food tastes better. People are enjoying the food, so therefore Shabbos meals would be bigger, so therefore we qualify it with a weekday type of meal. As the Gemara will explain that when people have good tasting food, they find more room in their stomach expands, so Shabbos meals would be bigger, so therefore we assess it with weekday meals. Rabbi Yehuda that says that we assess it with the Shabbos meals, he holds that no. That since on Shabbos we have to eat three meals, generally people eat two meals a day. But on Shabbos you have to have shalosh trudos, so therefore people don't eat that much with every meal because you have to pace yourself because you're having three meals, not two meals. Therefore the Shabbos meals are smaller, and therefore he says we assess it with the Shabbos meals, but ultimately both of them are trying to say the more lenient interpretation of how big have to be these two meals worth of what we're creating as an Erev Truma. Now the Mishnah continues with a machloikis regarding if you're creating Erev Truma with bread. How big does the bread have to be considered two meals worth of bread? On that, the Mishnah tells us, Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka Omer, Mikikir bepunyin. If you want to have two meals worth of bread, it has to be a loaf of bread that costs a punyin, which is 1/48 of a sela, at a time when midalid sa'in besela, when four sa' of grain is going to cost a sela. Now, Rashi explains the whole explanation of how we get to this computation, and that is the Gemara assumes right now that a half a kav is two meals worth, and therefore the loaf of bread is going to be a half a kav, and therefore since that two meals worth, that will be the two meals worth that you have to have for the Eved Chumen. So Rashi tells us how was that. So Rashi tells us because six ma'ah, when you're calculating the monetary part, there's calculating the money part, and then how much would that be regarding the food part. So six ma'ah is in one dinner. And a ma' is 2 punyin. That comes out that a dinner is 12 punyin. So therefore that comes out that a sela, which is for dinner, is going to be 48 punyin. That's with the monetary value of knowing what a punyin is. And again, as we said, that's 1/48 of a sela. Now a sa' is 6 kavan. Therefore, when our Mishnah was saying that it's going to be 4 sa' for a sela, how much are 4 sa'? That's since a saw, again, the 6 kavan, so 4 saw is going to be 24 kavan. That comes out. That's 48, half a kavan. Therefore, that's what the calculation that our Mishnah of Rabbi Yechim Rikah was coming to tell us, that a half a kav is going to be a punya, because again, that's ultimately a 48th of both of them. That is, when a 4 sawin costs a sela, so if you take a 48th of the sela, which is a punyan, and you take a 48th of the four saw, that's going to be a half a kav. So the punyan will buy you a half a kav of bread, which is 12 beits, which is 12 eggs worth. That's Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka's pshat in how much bread has to be. Reb Shimon comes to make the shear even smaller. He says that the loaf of bread that we're talking about is not a half a kav, rather it's only a third of a kav. And Ayman, he tells us that every kav has 9 meals worth of food, and not like Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka, who had said that a kav has only 4 meals worth, as we said, because he said the kikar is a half a kav, and that half a kav is 2 meals worth. That means that a whole kav will be only 4 meals worth. Rabbi Shimon holds that a kav includes 9 meals worth, and therefore it's enough for the Erev, shtei yadus lekikar. You only need 2/3 of the loaf of bread to be a valid Erev Tchumen. When mishalish lekav, when 3 loaves of bread are a total of a kav, which comes out that a whole single loaf is going to be a third of a kav, and that's why when you have 3 loaves, that's a whole kav. Now 2/3 of a third of a kav, right? Each loaf is a third of a kav. 2/3 of that loaf is going to be 2 meals worth, and therefore Reb Shimon says that you need much less than Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka, which our Gemara will show that the interpretation is not as, the discrepancy is not as great as it seems right now. But right now it seems that Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka holds that there's 4 meals to every kav, and therefore you have to have a much greater amount for the half a kav that we're saying of what the punyan buys you. And Shimon says that there's 9 meals to every kav, and therefore he says to have 2 meals worth is going to be much less than the shir of Rabbi Yechon and Bereke. Then the Mishnah concludes and says two different halachas related to this. Chetzi lebeis hamenuga. Half of this loaf of bread, which we said the kikar is whether it be a third according to Reb Shimon or be a half a kav according to Rechman Bereka, half of that loaf is what's necessary for the halacha of a house afflicted with tzaras. And that is, this is going according to everybody. And that is, this half of this complete loaf that we had used for the estimate of the Erev, whether according to Reb Shimon or according to Rechman Bereka, when you're coming and you're spending a short amount of time in a house that has a tumas tzaras, regarding the halacha being metami, the garments of that the person's wearing, so the one that goes in, he becomes tummy right away. As the pasuk in Vayikra Yidal says, "V'habola baisit," whoever comes in, he becomes tummy right away. However, regarding the chiv to have to wash your clothing, it only tells us that it's if you stay there the amount of time of how long it would take to eat, as it says in the pasuk, "V'oichel b'bayis," whoever eats in the house, yichabes is because he'll have to wash his clothing. Now it's explained in Taras Kayanim that it means to say, it doesn't mean that actually you have to eat. It means that you spent the amount of time that a meal's worth takes, even if you didn't eat. Now therefore, a half of this loaf is the kedei achila, as we had explained that because this loaf is 2 meals worth, so the amount of eating 1 meal's worth, which is the kedei achila, is half of this kikar, and therefore it's going to be the shear of half of this loaf for the base of nuga for the garments to become tummy to have to wash your clothing. Now Rashi tells us something interesting, that although according to Reb Shimon, regarding the halacha of Eiv, we just explained, in every kikar, in every loaf, there's 3 sudas worth, and that's why he said that you only need to have 2/3 of the loaf to be considered an Eiv. So therefore, l'chor, you would have to have half of 2/3, not half of the loaf for the halacha of Beis HaMenuga, because 2/3 of the loaf is already 2 meals worth. If you only have to have 1 meal's worth, l'chor, you wouldn't have to have half of the loaf. You would have to have half of 2/3 of the loaf for the halacha of Beis HaMenuga, to have 1 meal's worth to make your garments tummy. And that Rashi tells us that it's only regarding the shear of the Eiv, where, as we had said in the Mishnah, that everybody's intention was to be Mekel. And therefore we said that it's only 2/3. However, the shear Suda, the Rabbanan had established that regarding, it's always in the shear of the Kikar, in the loaf of bread. And therefore you have to wait the amount of time that it takes to eat half of the entire loaf. And this is what's called throughout Shas, what's called pras, right? It's called b'chdei achilas pras. You hear that term a lot. And what is that term based on? That's on this idea where the shear is in a broken piece. In other words, half of the loaf is how much a meal's worth usually takes. B'chdei achilas pras, and eating half of the loaf, that's 1 meal's worth. So therefore, that's the halacha regarding a beis hamenuga. Then the Mishnah concludes, v'chatzi chatzia, and half of the half, in other words, a quarter of the loaf, is lifsel esekvi, is to invalidate, to make pusil a person's body. And that is regarding if someone eats tamei foods in the amount of a half of a pras, right? A pras is a half a loaf, and half of that is a quarter of the loaf. His body becomes pusil from eating truma. And that's a halacha d'rabbanan, because generally, oichlin, food items, are not metame a person. And Rabbanan, what goes there, whoever eats it should become pasul b'truma until he immerses himself in the mikvah, as the Gemara says at the last paragraph of Masechtas Yuma on Peyam Beis, that hanach l'tumas gviya, leave alone the halacha of tumas of the body, which is a person that eats something that's tamei, where now he becomes invalid for eating truma until he tivels, to lav derais, which is not a deraistic halacha, and therefore that's based on a quarter of a loaf, which is a half of 1 meal's worth. That's halacha, if you eat that amount of tamei foods, then you become invalid for eating truma until you tivel in the mikvah. Now the Gemara wants to know, v'kama masen shtei sudas. So how much is the 2 meals worth of food? That's we're obviously not asking according to Yochanan ben Bereka or Reb Shimon, who they clearly establish regarding bread, how much is 2 meals worth of bread. Rather, the question is according to Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, that they seem to be saying similar halachas, because they're both really just trying to say the more lenient interpretation of what's the smaller 2 meals worth. How much is that? So I'm Reb Yehuda Merav. Tarti rifta ichara yasa. We're talking about 2 loaves of bread of the shepherds. And that is that the ikar, who they're the ones that lead the oxen, that they would carry with these 2 breads with them in the field. That amount of those 2 breads is the shear of beis sudas that a person has to have to create his erev tchumen. And the Gemara elaborates, Rav Adra Ava Amar, says, Tarti Rift in the Har Pabayasa. If you want to know how big, at least in the times of the Gemara, when he was telling the people that were hearing his halacha, it's the same as two breads of Nahar Pabayas, which is the name of a place. He was saying that is the size, if you want to know the halacha, of two meals worth of Erev Tchumen. So, Amr Rav Yosef, the Rav Yosef Berei de Rav, Avuch Kaman, who did your father hold like from these Tanoim in the Mishnah, severely, who did he hold like regarding the halacha of Erev? Did he hold like Rabbi Yehuda or like Rabbi Meir? And that is based on the halacha, that regarding the halacha of Erev, every single person establishes his two meals worth based on how much he eats. So therefore, if he's coming to estimate by himself, what does he estimate with his Shabbos meal, how much he normally eats? Or does he establish based on his weekday meal, how much he eats? So he answered him, Krimeya Sevilei, says, my father held a Krimeya that you establish it with the weekday meal. So he responded to him, Anonami Krimeya Sevilei. I also hold a Krimeya that we assess the two meals worth for Erev Tchumen with weekday meals. Dik Rabbi Yehuda, because we really held like Rabbi Yehuda, that the halacha is with the Shabbos meals, Sakasha, I find it difficult to find how he's the more lenient. As we said, they're both trying to be in the lenient interpretation of saying that it's the lesser meal on Shabbos than the weekday. Hadamri Inshi, this that people say, that Ravcha, there's room, Libesi Meshchiach, that you find room for something that tastes good. In other words, that almost like the stomach expands to find room for something that's sweet. And as we know, with dessert or ice cream, whatever it is, you suddenly find room. So basically, he was saying that on Shabbos, where the food tastes much better, as the Gemara says elsewhere, the tavlin, and it's called Shabbos, it's a great spice, and it's good food on Shabbos. Therefore, I find it hard to believe how the Shabbos meals could be less food than the weekday meals. And therefore, I pass on like Rav Meir that we assess it with the weekday meals, which are smaller than the Shabbos meals. And that's why that's going to be the two meals worth of the Erev Tchumen. So our Mishnah told us, Rabbi Yechon ben Bereko, and Rabbi Yechon tells us, and he tells us the shear of bread for the Erev, and then Rabbi Shimon, he argued and he said a different interpretation. So the Gemara says, Tanu, learn the Braisa, Ukravim Devreim, that the words of Rabbi Yechon ben Bereko and Rabbi Shimon are very closely shoven to be the same. They're not so far the discrepancy of their opinions in what is the shear of the two meals worth of bread for the Erev Tchumen. So the Gemara asks, me dummy? Are they even close? As we had explained before, according to Rabbi Yechanan, for every kav, there's only four meals worth. As we explained, that the kikar is a half a kav. And we said every kikar is two meals worth. So therefore it comes out that a kav is times two is four meals worth. Rabbi Shimon, tesha sudus lakava. But according to Rabbi Shimon, it's more than double. It's nine meals worth for every kav. As we explained, that the kikar is a third of a kav. And he said that in every loaf, that's why he said you only have to have two-thirds of the loaf of bread, because he said that every loaf is three meals worth. So you take three times the loaf, it's going to come out to nine meals. So how can we say Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi Yechon, and Shimon are not so far apart? One says it's every kav is four meals, another one says for every kav is nine meals. So Rabbi Chizah says, Seiman shlish lechemen. He says you have to understand this in the greater context of when you're purchasing a loaf of bread for a punyan, that you have to incorporate a third of the profit of this punyan that's going to the chemeni, to the storekeeper that's selling you the bread. And that is, Rabbi Yechon ben Bereko did not mention that it's a half a kav, that's how much you're buying with the punyan. We're talking about a loaf of bread that was purchased from the chemeni with a punyan, but the chemeni himself, the storekeeper, he has to make some profit also on the half a kav that he purchased with a punyan. He has to make at least a third of profit, because he has to support himself. So therefore, in essence, he's really only selling you two-thirds of a half a kav for a punyan. Because again, he had a third of that, he wants to make profit. He also gets it only a half a kav for a punyan. So he has to sell you only really two-thirds of the half a kav for a punyan. Now, in those two-thirds is what Rabbi Yechanan tells us that's two meals worth. So it comes out that in truth, in a half a kav is really not two meals, but rather three meals. And the loaf of bread is really a third of a kav. And that's going to be two meals. And if you multiply that by three, that's going to be six, which brings us to the Gemara's next question. So, fine. So we're saying that you have to incorporate also the fact that it's really only two-thirds of a half a kav. That's going to be the two meals worth for Rabbi Yechon ben Bereko. But Vakati, however, the Gemara asks, it's still a discrepancy. Because Lamar, according to Rabbi Shimon, Tisha, as we said, there's going to be nine meals for every kav. Well, Lamar, but according to Rabbi Yechon ben Bereko, Shis, there's only going to be six meals for every kav. As we explained, because the kav itself, the two meals worth is going to be the third of the kav. multiply that by 3 to get it up to a full kav, that's only going to give you 6 mil worth. So therefore, there's still a discrepancy of 9 to 6. How can we say they're so close? So the Gemara says, rather, el ki'idach Rav Chisda. Rather, we have to base it on a different halacha Rav Chisda. Dama that he says, tsemehen mechtze l'chemene. That rather, the chemene storekeeper, it's not enough for him to make a markup of just a third. He has to mark it up 50%. And therefore, it comes out that the half a kav is really half of that half a kav, which is a quarter of a kav. And therefore, it comes out that the kikar is a revius of a kav, and therefore, it's going to be 8 kav. It's going to be 8 meals for every kav. So which the Gemara asks, Vakati, but still, it's still going to be a discrepancy. Lamar, according to Rabbi Shimon, Tesha, or Lamar Tamni. And according to Rabbi Yechon Bereka, it's going to be only 8, as we said. We said every kikar is 2 meals worth. Now, how much is the kikar? We're saying that it's really only a quarter of a kav, as we said, because the half a kav, he's marking up 50%, he's only getting half of that, which is a quarter of a kav. So fine, so quarter means to say you have to multiply by 4 to get a total kav. So 2 mils worth times 4 is going to be 8. So fine, you know, but there's still a discrepancy of Rabbi Shimon being 9 mils worth and Bechem Rekha being 8 mils worth. That's what Gemara says, hind the kamer. That's what we had said in the price. Ukraven devrim liyishavin, that they're very close to be equal. You're right, they're not the same exact, but they're not so far as it naturally seems. And that is originally we had thought they're very different. One is 9 mils worth, that's Rabbi Shimon, another one is 4 mils worth. And now we say, no, based on Rav Chisda's principle of that there's a half, 50% markup, so therefore you're only getting half of that, it comes out that it's going to be 8 mils worth for every kav, and therefore that's not so different than Rabbi Shimon who says 9 mils worth. But then the Gemara says, we tried answering Rechem Reka with these two different interpretations of Chizda. Kasha Rav Chizda, Rav Chizda. It seems to be a contradiction on these two interpretations. In one halachic statement, he says that the markup for the Chemini is only a third. And the other one, he says, it's a 50% markup, it's a half. How do we resolve these two contradictory statements from Rav Chizda? How much markup does the Chemini make? I think the Gemara says, Loi Kasha. Ha, the one that says that he only charges a third more, is the koyoiv balabai tzivi, where the homeowner, the one that wants him to bake the bread, he supplies the firewood. Then the store owner, he only demands a third percent increase to make the money. Ha, but there where we said he charges a 50% increase of half of that is the loyov balabaitzim, where the homeowner does not give the firewood, so then the firewood costs money, is all these expenses. He says, I gotta make money, I gotta charge a 50% increase, and therefore that's the two halachas of Rav Chisda that yes, depending on if the supplies are coming from the one that is purchasing the bread, if he supplies that, then he's only gonna charge a third more. If he doesn't supply, he's gonna charge a half more, but ultimately we use the halacha of Rav Chisda of charging a half more, which is in the case of when he's not supplying the firewood, to explain what Rabbi Yechim Ibrahim was talking about for 8 meals for every kav, which is not so different than Rabbi Shimon's halacha of 9 meals worth for every kav, and they're very similar regarding what is the shear of bread necessary for the 2 meals worth of an Erev Tchum.